Our good friends at Johnny O welcome you to this episode. Now, the iconic Johnny O clothing brand logo of the surfer and his longboard first caught my eye several years ago, but it's the signature Johnny O style where West Coast meets East Coast prep that truly changed the game for me, and I've been wearing Johnny O ever since. And now our listeners can use promo code RICHTAKE at checkout for 20% off your first order at johnny-o.com. That's 20% off the regular price at johnny-o.com. Use the promo code RICHTAKE at checkout for 20% off your first order.
Exploring the impact of sports. Welcome to Rich Take on Sports, the sports podcast with life. Having conversations and hearing personal stories from those who have been impacted, built, and inspired by the role of sports in their lives. Here's your host, Richmond Weaver.
We're going to do this!
This is episode 130. Thanks for being an investor by investing your time to listen. No matter what your age, we all have experienced some type of setbacks in our lives. But Kayla Burns Hefner believes that sometimes those perceived setbacks just might be a change to a better pathway. But one thing that has remained constant is her love of sports and the impactful stories created through sports. She would be one of the first students to graduate through the newly formed Sports Communication Program at Clemson University in 2017, where she served as a student reporter for the Clemson Insider and was a Sports Illustrated Clemson correspondent for Campus Rush before moving to Bristol, Connecticut to work at the worldwide leader in sports, ESPN, as a production assistant. And now she can be found in Charlotte, North Carolina with ESPN as a content associate. Here's episode 130 with Kayla Burns Hefner. Kayla, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you letting me steal some of your time coming down here to Greenville
of
in
course.
The studio.
Thank you for having me. The studio looks awesome. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank
I know you,
you
guys have been working on a lot of things for a really long time, so it's really cool to see it all come together
slowly,
and to be here.
It is. It's slowly coming together, so we're excited about it. And again, I'm excited to have you be a guest here and share some of your journey and just why sports means so much to you and just the life lessons that you can learn from sports. Because I think a lot of us that have played sports, have been in sports, whatever, take a lot from sports that we don't necessarily think about on a daily basis.
Right.
It's just inherently or subconsciously in part of our DNA. It gets, you know, built in there and we're molded by it. And so I want to be able to explore some of that, even though you're a lot younger than me, right? But you still have been touched by sports. And so speaking of your youth, and you know, it's only been a few years since you've graduated from Clemson. And obviously, as another Clemson grad here, I always love talking to another Tiger. But how much do you miss the college life?
I miss it here and there. It's interesting for me because I do work in college sports, so I'm around college sports all the time. So I don't really feel like I've totally left it because I still am so involved in it and kind of getting to be around people that are just like in it all the time. So that I think has kind of put like this different perspective on me is like, I'm like, well, I'm still surrounded by college sports. It's still part of my everyday life, but I'm not in it anymore. And I will say the first year after college was really hard. I've been out for almost 3 years now.
So what was so tough about that first year?
It's just, well, first I moved, I obviously went to Clemson and then I moved straight from Clemson to Connecticut. And
yeah, that's a tough move
in
itself.
It was really far and I didn't know a lot of people there. There weren't really many people from Clemson where I was at. So I didn't have that immediate like support group of like, oh, we just left. And I'm seeing all my friends in D.C. because a lot of them moved to D.C. afterwards and we're kind of still living in that post-college life. Still kind of having that like camaraderie of being together all the time, and I just didn't have that in that way, so that was pretty tough for me, and I didn't get to go back and visit. You know, all my friends were going back and visiting for Clemson games and having reunions and that kind of stuff, and that first year out, I didn't have the opportunity to do that. But then recently, since I've moved to Charlotte, I've been so much closer, and now I kind of feel still very much so connected to Clemson, so it's actually kind of been a reverse. Like, it was harder at first, and now it's
a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Because Charlotte seems like a young person's city.
Oh, absolutely.
It seems like it's just a melting pot of a lot of the schools around in the South that a lot of people gravitate and go to Charlotte.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of people from Clemson. A lot of people that I was really close with in school actually ended up moving there. A college roommate of mine moved to Charlotte recently. So we still have that whole group of people where if I want to catch a random Clemson basketball or game, something like that, I can just go and hang out with them and hang out with my Clemson people. But there's people from literally all over. The funny thing about Charlotte is that people always talk about Charlotte and they're like, well, if you're from Charlotte, you're rare, because everybody comes from a different place, which I think is really interesting. And it's a really cool opportunity to be able to get to know so many young people and their paths and, you know, what they've done in life. And it's a really, really up and coming city with a lot of fun things to do, whether you like to be active and walk and jog on the light rail that they have, or if you're more into the social scene and the drinking scene, they've got tons of breweries and all that kind of stuff too. So it's really a really great.
Did you take part in all of it, from the walking, the breweries, all of it, right?
Yeah, I've actually really recently have gotten really into Orange Theory. So they have an Orange Theory studio right by my apartment.
And well, see, now you're talking about health and fitness too much.
We don't have to talk about health and fitness. We can go back to sports, but that's a big reason of why I still stay involved with it, is because I needed that kind of organized thing to keep me, you know, still staying healthy and involved. And that's what Orange Theory has been kind of like for me, since I haven't been involved in that for quite some time now.
How much are you traveling though?
All the time.
Yeah. So do you even get to I guess, take advantage of Charlotte?
In the football season, no, not so much. I think I actually spent more days on the road than I did in my own home, which it was a really cool experience. So I wouldn't take that for anything. Like, I
yeah, because you can do it now because you're young.
Yes, and exactly.
There's nothing really to tie you down, so to speak.
Nothing. I have no dogs. That would probably be really difficult if I had a dog and I was having to, you know, board it or something. I've got a roommate. She travels a lot too, and that's really all I've got. So I'm pretty free to go wherever I want, which has been really awesome to be able to travel and have that opportunity to kind of like go wherever and really explore the world. So that's been a really cool opportunity. Now things have kind of slowed down a little bit. I'm going to start traveling again, but and I've been able to kind of go back to my Charlotte life, and I love it.
What are some of the most favorite places you've been able to visit so far that maybe surprised you as well?
Related to work or related to
related
just life
to work,
in general?
Just maybe even just life in general. Just that, I guess, that you were able to travel to through your work that you probably wouldn't have traveled to if you didn't have to for work.
Yeah. Well, recently I got to go out to the Fiesta Bowl in Arizona. And that was a really, really cool experience. I went out to the national championship, and obviously Clemson was in there, so I would have wanted to be there, but cost-wise, I don't think I could have really had afford to go into that game if it weren't for being there for work. So having that opportunity to be down there in New Orleans, the culture there is something that I've always really loved. And thankfully, I've had the opportunity to go down there a couple times, some through work and some through just for fun. And it's just like an incredible place that maybe I wouldn't have not necessarily got to experience fully otherwise.
Why did you choose Clemson?
Wow. So I actually really, really, really tried hard not to go to Clemson, which is the funniest thing, because now I can't picture my college career anywhere else. My brother went to Clemson. He's 4 years older than me, and my brother and I had a great relationship growing up. We were actually the two siblings that everybody would always say, like, how do you guys never fight? You're just that right age where, you know, we're 4 years apart. So just that right age where we're kind of in different spots in our lives at all times. But I'm just young enough to be the annoying little sister. But in my brother's eyes, I was just young enough to be someone who needed to be protected at all times. And I thought that that was kind of really the foundation of our relationship. Like, it's the only times that we were ever in school together were elementary school, when I was like a first grader and he was a fifth grader. And then college, we both ended up overlapping when he did a graduate program at Clemson. So in every single time, it's always kind of been like, he's been looking after me. So we never really had that whole like head to head, like fight each other kind of thing. It was a very great relationship. So that wasn't really the factor in why I didn't want to go. Like, I didn't want to be like, oh, I can't be at school with my older brother.
Right?
But I wanted to be my own person. I wanted to have my own path and do my own thing and, like, you know, separate myself from my brother in my family's eyes is, like, you know, we have different lives. We're not the same person. But I had been going to Clemson football games for 4 years. You think about it, the time I get to my freshman year of high school, I'm going to see Maryland was still in the ACC at the time, and I was going to see Clemson play at Maryland and destroy, and I'm like, this is it, this is what I want. And I'm going down to visit my brother for, you know, all of his different events, and I just, the family atmosphere there is like something, I know you grasp it, but you really can't truly explain until
it's hard
you get
to
down
explain
there.
Until you experience
and
it firsthand.
I loved it. I loved it so much. But I really, really, really was like, nope, I'm going to do my own thing. I knew from a very young age that I wanted to go into journalism. So I was looking at all of these schools with great journalism programs. I was looking at Florida, Georgia, like you name it, big school. I had applied to it. And I really thought I was going to go to the University of Georgia. And I loved it, everything about them. I thought their program was incredible. My best friend from high school was going down there. We were going to go down there together. And I even put the bumper sticker of Georgia on my car, which I'll be fair. It wasn't that big of a commitment because it's the same logo as my high school. So,
so
it was just a mild
it.
Commitment. Right. So, but everybody thought, they're like, oh, Kayla's going to go to Georgia. They have a great journalism program. And then she loves football. So this makes perfect sense, you know, go to the SEC and, you know, watch SEC sports. But I just, there was something about Clemson that I just thought that I couldn't let go of. And it actually came down to their communications program. So I was touring the university's communications buildings with one of the heads of the communications department at the university, Joe Mazur. And his wife at the time was in the hospital, like getting ready to have their kid. And he was like, you know, keeps grabbing his phone and he's like, just like pretending nothing's happening. But I know that his wife's in the hospital, like about to have a child. And I'm like, you can go, like you can literally
exactly.
leave and be with her. Like, I'm not going to be upset. I can get a meeting from like any random student to show me around these buildings. It's okay. But he wanted to sit me down. He took me into his office and showed me all these plans for what they had for building the sports communication program at Clemson. And he was like, you would get to be a part of the
start
of this.
Yeah, because it wasn't built yet.
At the
they
time,
just had communications,
mm-hmm. At the time,
sports
I couldn't have even been a sports communication applicant. I had to just be a communication studies applicant. And then I would go in, wait until they officially opened up the major, and then I could apply to switch into that sports communication major. So I knew, I was like, I would have a couple of steps to be in it, but he was showing me all these plans that they had for it. And just like the fact that he took that time to not only do that, but do that while his wife was like in labor. I was like, this is the most special place. Like, this is a place where I can go, where they're going to look after me. I'm going to be one of few instead of one of the many, which is at the other schools, I would have been one of, you know, hundreds of students going into the same exact field. And that the competition aspect of that didn't scare me. I knew I would succeed.
You weren't afraid of that.
I wasn't afraid of that, but I know myself, and I know, like, if I can be in a small group, I can become a leader in a small group, not just like a prominent member of a large group. So I really took
What about
that
to the aspect
heart.
Of thinking that you could also be involved in something that's ground floor and be a part of building it?
Yeah. And I don't think at the time, because I was so young, I really grasped that idea. But I did know that that did play a huge factor in my decision making and deciding to go to Clemson. And at that time, when I was kind of looking at going to college, was the time where I really started to become more of a goal-oriented person. Because before that, like, yes, I had athletic goals I wanted to accomplish, and I had things in my life that I needed to do to order and feel I succeeded. But it wasn't until when I was like really looking into my future where I was like, okay, here's a step, here's the next step, here's the next step, and then I'm going to get to what I want to do ultimately. Because at that time, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. So I was just trying to find the best path that would take me there. And with Clemson, I was like, this is an opportunity to, like, yeah, maybe it doesn't end up being as great as they plan it in those first couple of years. Or maybe it ends up being something where I can, you know, turn it into the best experience for me. And mm-hmm. that's exactly what ended up happening. Mm-hmm. I graduated with 5 students in the sports communication department.
That's a small
Yeah. Knew every single one of them. Had worked with every single one of them. And it was incredible. I ended up being an ambassador for the college. I gave tours for the sports communication students that were coming in to like kind of help grow the program and grow the interest in the program. So I've seen it evolve so much. I actually was an ambassador to the dean of the college, too, for the sports communication side of things, too. So it ended up being a really great opportunity.
Yeah. How proud are you now seeing?
Oh, extremely.
The department has grown.
Extremely. And I look at even just like the companies that I worked with when I was there and how many people that they've had come through and how much success that those people have had in just a short amount of time. And I'm like, I've only been out of school for 3 years. And just to see how much the program has grown tremendously and how the students who have come through the program have grown and have had more opportunities, increased roles in, you know, athletics and being able to do so much more than I saw when I was there. It's been awesome. I'm really, really happy to see that people are having bigger and better opportunities, you know, with that program growing.
Now, you mentioned you knew exactly what you wanted to do. And also you had said something about early on, you knew you wanted to be in journalism.
Yeah.
So what was that? What was that that you knew exactly what you wanted to do when you were at Clemson?
So I had an experience when I was in high school that kind of really shaped the whole rest of my entire life. You know, growing up, I was always a social person. I wouldn't say I was the most outgoing person. I would say that I wanted to entertain people, but I wasn't necessarily like the most outgoing person in the classroom at any point.
So you weren't the class clown?
No, definitely not. I was super serious about my schoolwork. I definitely was not a class clown. But I did always put on like little random plays in my basement. Like I would do a show for my family and they'd be like, what is our daughter doing? It's showtime. All right, let's get our tickets. We're going to the basement.
Let's go.
Kayla's going to do a show. So I was just doing random stuff like that. Oh my God, horrible. We don't need to get into that.
No, we do. We do. I need to know.
You remember, you probably wouldn't know this. Maybe your kids
would
know
this. Oh, now you're dating me because I'm too old. That's right.
Well, there was like those Kids Bop CD albums that would come out that were like outlandish and they just had a bunch of different random songs on them.
I don't remember those.
No, okay. Well, then I was young. But okay. I would have a CD and I would put in the CD and like choreograph different routines. They could be like acting routines. They could be like dance routines. I was a dancer growing up. So most of it was dance related and just like stupid stuff. And I would just like put on this routine for my family. And
yeah,
then
not, it might be stupid that as you look at it now, but back then you didn't think it was stupid.
Like,
you
this
loved
is
it.
How I spent my time. So I was always wanting to be some form of a type of entertainer. And I knew that, you know, I was really good in school, but I wasn't super passionate about wanting to pursue engineering. Like my brother's a biomedical engineer. I did not want to pursue that. I was good at science and I had great grades, but it's just not something that I really wanted to see, you know, my career. And so I always knew that I wanted to be something on the communications, entertainment, like centric kind of side of things. But it wasn't until I had this experience in high school that I like really solidified exactly what I wanted to do. And I told you I was a dancer. So yes. I had been dancing since the time I was 3 years old. I've done probably every other sport you could possibly think of in that time, too. I tried to get away from dancing as many times as I wanted, but I loved dancing. It was my number one.
Yeah, so why were you trying to get away from it, though, if you loved it so much?
I was a big tomboy, and I was doing – so I was doing ballet, and I was also, like, a tomboy wanting to be just like my brother. So I had this, like, identity crisis when I was little, and I was like, I want to play sports. I don't want to be in a – tutu and be a ballerina, but I am, and I'm good at it and I love it, but I also want to play sports. But I was like, I wanted to do both. So for a really long time I did both, but it wasn't until right before my sophomore year of high school where I solidified that I was only going to do dance. And at that point I had been doing dancing competitively for my high school's dance team for a year, and then also doing travel softball at the same time. And so I had narrowed it down to those two, but at the time I was like, all right, I have to focus on one. This is like, I'm gonna focus on dance. I'm gonna try to take this as far as I can go. So I focused on dance, and it was my sophomore year. really excited on it to like finally have like just be the dancer.
Yeah, this is now your opportunity. Just dialed
to just
in.
Go,
just
focus everything focus on my training and dancing. Mm-hmm. And it was pep rally of my sophomore year. So super early on in the year. And we were doing our little pep rally routine for the whole school, get everybody excited for football season to start. And we have a kick routine in the middle of our routine. And something I'd done for forever. Like my whole freshman year, I competed. I did football games where we had a kick line. And we ended our kick lines with like the flying splits, which you like jump up, hit the splits, and land on the ground.
So yeah, that's amazing in itself. So keep going.
So I had done that my whole freshman year, like really grew a lot as a dancer. I went from, we had levels of being a dancer on our high school dance team. And so I went as a conditional member, which meant I had to try out for every single event that we ever done to prove myself that I was good enough to be competing with the other girls, to a full-time member by my sophomore year, which was astronomical of a jump to be able to make that much of an improvement in 1 year. And so from that, I was stoked. I was so excited. I get out there in front of my whole class and we hit our kick routine. And I had been kind of having some like random lingering pain in my hamstring. And I didn't really think about it. You know, I was young. I wasn't thinking about any long-term implications. And I hit the flying split and I legitimately popped my hamstring when I hit the ground.
Right at that moment.
In front of my whole school. Yep. Right at that moment. And I knew that that was the moment that I tore my hamstring. And I...
Was there an audible? I mean, you could hear it?
Oh, I felt it. You could feel it pop.
Feel it.
You know, when you pull a hamstring, I don't know if you ever have, but like...
I pull
the
a hamstring like every other week, it seems, because I'm stiff as a 2x4.
Well, the tendons, like they like curl up, you know? So you feel that pop and like it's, you know... Well, I knew that something had happened, but I still had half the routine left to do. So I did the half of the routine. Like I got up off the floor. I guess adrenaline was pumping. I wasn't
because you knew people were watching you as
well,
right?
Oh, yeah, people were watching. It was my whole class. I had no choice. It's like everybody I've ever known in my whole life is just watching me. I can't just lie here on the floor.
This is your shining moment right now.
Right. So that happens, and then I have to get pulled off the floor to go. We had a second performance in probably like the next 20 minutes or so. I go over to my coach. I'm like, Coach, I can't walk. And she was like, well, you have to figure it out because you have to dance. And I was like, I can't. And she was like, at this time, I these are dance terms, but my kicks were pretty high. Like I was one of the girls who could kick my leg up as high as anybody on the team. And she looks at me and she goes, well, kick a little lower and hit jazz split, like fake it. It'll be fine. We need you. So it's like, okay. I'm like, what am I going to say? I'm like, I can't say no. I can't just screw up my entire team's routine. Like everything's based off formations. Like everybody's expecting me to be there. So I do that. Overcompensating for my right hamstring, I pull my left one. I don't know if at that time I like tore it because I didn't feel the same pop feeling that I felt in my right hamstring, but I definitely pulled it. And then I like really had to be carried off the floor. So that kind of started this whole process of like, I had never really been injured before. I'd broken a bone in my foot, like nothing. It was no big deal. But I was like, okay, well, what do I do now?
So now both left and right hamstring.
I was in
done.
So much pain. But I don't know. Maybe this is just like the way that I was built or whatever. I have a really weird high pain tolerance. So like even when I mentioned that I fractured my foot, like I was playing basketball with a fractured foot and went into the doctor and was like, hey, I think I broke my foot, but I've been like running around on it. And she was like, no, you didn't. Gets the x-ray back. Oh, you did break your foot. Okay, cool. We'll put you in a cast.
You're a tomboy.
So
just rub
like,
some dirt on
yeah,
and
I'm
keep
fine.
Going, right?
Playing with the boys. I'm good. So like, you know, I was like, oh, maybe I'm fine. Like, I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm walking around, like, but something just wasn't right. So I would go to the doctors, mostly, like, sports medicine-specific doctors. And over the span of from my sophomore year to my senior year, I saw 10 different doctors. It took me until – so this would have happened in, like, August, September of my sophomore year. And it took me until my junior year in, like, February before I was correctly diagnosed with 2 torn hamstrings. And after that point, it was the 8th doctor that I had seen that finally diagnosed that I had 2 torn hamstrings. So I was going through, like, cortisone treatments, physical therapy every single week, like, twice a week sometimes. I was being told I could dance because honestly, my MRIs were so inflamed that they couldn't tell that there was any tears. They could just see that there was inflammation. So they're thinking like it's growing pains, like, you know, whatever. She's fine. She can keep dancing. Just pump her up with some cortisone. She'll be okay. So I do this for like a year and a half or so, and I'm kind of still dancing, but I'm in a lot of pain. I'm like having to take like as many Motrin as you're literally allowed to take in a day to like get through some of my dance classes and my dance routines. And it was just like the hardest time of my whole life, because it's like, no, you don't have a cast. You don't have like a wheelchair or any physical proof that you're injured. Like for your hamstrings, there's nothing really that they can do. Like they can put some kinesio tape on you and you can look like, okay, well, she's got some tape on her, but like it's not even a brace that you can use. So I had a really hard time because I was so hurt, but people didn't really realize that I was in so much pain.
And could you communicate that to people? Were you trying to tell people?
Yeah, I would try to tell my coach. I would try to tell my dance teachers. And it was just a really trying time for me because I was like, I can't do this. I know doctors are saying X, Y, Z and that I can, but I'm in so much pain, I can't. And like, I would just have to be there for my team every single day. So regardless of whether or not I was feeling up to dancing that day, I'd still be there, still sit there and watch my team go through their routines and basically compete a whole season without me. And I really wanted to be there, and I physically looked like I could be there, but I just was in so much pain that I couldn't really like communicate to people that I really just could not be there, that I wasn't injured. But I didn't have that direct statement that was like, her hamstrings are torn. I just had, oh, she's got some inflammation. We don't really know what's going on, until I reached that point where I hit my eighth doctor. And the funny thing
evidence.
Is, yeah, they had ordered a new MRI. They're like, okay, well, we've been going off this one MRI for like years, so let's order a new MRI. I guess it was higher tech or something. So I remember distinctly walking through the hallway of the doctor's office, and it was in Baltimore, and it was like the facility where the surgeons for the Baltimore Ravens like work there. The guy that I was going to see has like worked with the Lakers. He worked with the Lakers in their 2009 championship. Like literally the most talented doctors we could have found were there. So I was like, okay, I'm walking through the hallway. I see like signed pictures of Ravens players being like, thank you for fixing me and I can play and it's great. And I'm like, oh my God, like I'm just a little high school dancer. Like what are they gonna think? And I walk into the room. And the doctor looks at me and he's looking at my MRI and he looks back at me like three different times. And he goes, how did you walk in my door? I'm like, well, I've just been walking for years.
He's like, this is what I'm used to.
I was like, I've just been, you know, walking around living my life. And he's like, your hamstrings are torn entirely off of your bone on both legs. He's like, you should not be able to walk. And I had it just had been my normal for so long. And I just had people telling me that I was okay enough for so long that I had nobody that really like was like, this isn't okay until that point. And so finally I was like, okay, well, now what do I do now that I have concrete evidence?
Yeah, what's the
that
next step?
This is it. So he told me, he was like, all right, well, we could do surgery on you, but if we do surgery, then you probably won't be the dancer that you were again. Cause you know, flexibility is a huge thing with dancers. When you're messing with, you know, cutting tendons and moving them and reattaching them, like you're really messing with all that aspect. So he's like, you might want to get some more consultations. So I did some more consultations, which leads to doctor number 10. And this doctor has like worked with Olympians. Like it's insane. I was like, how did I end up here?
And this is all in Baltimore.
Well, this one was now in Georgetown. I moved to DC. Like this guy was literally the head physician for the Washington Redskins. Not the Redskins. He was the head physician for the Washington Wizards at the time. So I was like, literally, what am I doing here? Like, am I okay? And he suggested this process. It's a little gross if I like super get into it, but the way it's called platelet rich plasma treatment. If you don't know what that means, it basically means
PRP.
PRP.
Yeah, so I'm in medical device world.
At the time when I was going through it, experimental is not the right word, but they hadn't really used it on, you know, dancers or people who weren't professional athletes.
Yeah, they were relatively investigational.
Yeah. So they had been doing, and he's like, we've been doing this on athletes. It really helps people, you know, get from week one to week two if they've got some minor tears. He's like, I've never really seen it on a dancer before, but it, what could it hurt? Like, if this doesn't work, you can go to surgery, whatever. So I do the treatment, and that's in July of 2012. And by January of 2013, I'm full on competing again. So it worked 100%. And
you feel normal.
Oh, I'm 100% fine. Yeah.
No pain. You can do everything that mm-hmm. you had been doing before.
Yeah. 100% full recovery. I did for a little while. Because I had so much scar tissue built up. I did have some pain. Like, I would be driving back from Clemson still. Like, the drive from Clemson to Maryland's like 10 hours.
And I was sitting that long.
So much pain. But that was just the scar tissue. They assured me, they're like, you'll get over that. I'm totally fine now. And I work out all the time. I still play sports recreationally. I dance here and there in college still. And I'm totally fine.
How timid are you, though, at times thinking, you know, at any moment it can happen again?
You don't think about it anymore. Well, the reason that I didn't end up pursuing dancing into college was because of that. I was so scared. I was actually in Clemson when they were having the dance tryouts for the Rally Cats team, and I'd always wanted to be a Rally Cat. Since my brother went to Clemson, I wanted that. That's what I wanted. I wanted to be a professional dancer. I wanted to be dancing for, now I know how little money they make, but I wanted to be dancing for, you know, NBA teams. And that was the career I saw for myself for so long. And this is why I'm like telling you this whole story, is that was my path. And I fought so hard to be able to get back to there. So I was like, I have to do this. But I was so scared when I was in Clemson. I was like, I can't do this, because what if I tear it and I'm back to square one? Like, I spent 2 years of my life like going to 10 different doctors. I'm like, I can't do this again. So I was like, well, honestly, when I was in high school, I had found this love because, like, I needed to get out of that rut somehow. You know, I'm sitting there having doctors tell me that I can never dance again, whatever, I need surgery. And I remember I hit a really, really low point. This might sound like ridiculous to people, you know, who've hit other really low points in their life, but to me at the time, this was a really low point. I was watching Friday Night Lights, the movie, not the TV show, in my basement alone. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen the movie, the star, Boobie Miles, is told he can never play football again, and he freaks out and yells at all the doctors. That literally happened to me.
That was you.
With the doctors when they told me I could never dance again, and I lost it. And I was like, I just felt for him so
much. You can't crush my dreams, basically, is what you're telling them.
And that's when I started to kind of realize, like, yes, I was a dancer, and yes, it's so different from other sports, but the feeling and the passion is still there. And at the end of the day, you're still people trying to pursue a dream. And I felt so strongly connected to that, like, fictional character that I knew was a real person in real life all the time, you know, everywhere. And you're sitting there and you're watching ESPN and you're seeing these guys in the NFL that are completely getting torn up. And I think I mentioned to you when we were chatting recently, I was really heavily watching RG3's career and how he was kind of going through that pressure if he had that lingering knee issue. And then back in January of 2013, ironically, when I was cleared, he completely destroyed his knee. And I felt so hard for him. And I wasn't even a Redskins fan at the time. I didn't even care. I had no reason to, like, pay attention to him whatsoever, except for, like, you know, he was in the area and he was such a prominent guy at the time. And I felt so connected to that story, even though it was so different from mine, but still had some of those same feelings that I was like, you can tell somebody a story, or you can tell somebody's story in a way to people that it can completely make them feel something and feel connected to what they're going through, even if it's entirely different. Like, you can experience a loss and then also express that to somebody else and they can feel something from that, and it's not their loss. So I was like, that's so incredible. And it's like, I'd always been watching sports my entire life. I'd been watching SportsCenter, was on my TV every single freaking day growing up. I had the Sports Illustrated, like, kid issue of the magazine coming to my house every single day. But it wasn't until I had felt a connection through what I had been through to what I was seeing people go through on my TV screen that I was like, I can tell those stories. I can sit down with people, hear their story, connect with them, and tell them in a way, like, with journalism and integrity, that makes people feel something and can help them get out of whatever they're going through in life. Because I started watching stories of, like, you know, athletes going through intense regimens of going through physical therapy and stuff. And I was like in physical therapy with a lot of really athletic people that were, you know, trying to get back to doing their sport. And I was, you know, trying to take on that same mindset and do that, even though it was dance and people see dance differently. But I was like, this is going to be like, I'm going to fully take this on as if like I'm an athlete. This is it. And so when I realized that, I was like, that's all I want to do. And so then I got really lucky my senior year. I was competing again. I was super happy that I had had this experience, that I had overcame something and found what I was really passionate about. And I had this mentor. We did this mentorship program at our school. So for my entire like last class period, I would go and do a mentorship. And I was doing a mentorship with a Comcast TV station. So then I learned how to shoot, produce, edit, interview people, do all of the like basic skill set. And I was like, yep, this will be my career, and I'll do this for sports, and I'll tell people's stories, and I'll impact people, and hopefully I'll be able to tell people's stories in a way that can help other people.
And so, you knew that pretty quickly.
I knew that immediately. Yeah. And that's when I was like, this is my path. And so since the time that, I guess it's a little bit confusing on like the exact time frame of when I figured that out, I don't really remember. But in the time frame from my sophomore year to my senior year of high school, that's when I figured it out. And I've been pursuing
that ever
since.
But you had something growing in you that this is something that I would feel passionate about. Was the same type of passion in terms of what you were feeling in terms of being able to tell these stories that you had as far as what your dream wanted to be as a dancer?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause at that point I pretty much knew my dance career was over. And like, that was something that I was going through for, you know, whenever, even if you don't have an injury that takes you out of a sport, you have something, some event, like you finish your senior season or whatever, you have some event that takes you out of sport. You could be a high school senior, you could be a college senior, or you could be, you know, a freshman, and all of a sudden a life event happens and you have to take yourself out of sport. That was my event. I knew, I was like, I know I can get back to where I am. But at that point I knew like I wasn't going to be a professional dancer. I wasn't going to, I'd given up basically my sports dreams. I wasn't going to go back and be a professional athlete. So at that point I knew, I was like, okay, well, you can't do nothing with your life. And I had been so goal oriented and so driven to get through my hamstring injuries that's when I was like, I need to be goal oriented and pursue my dream. And my new dream was to be in sports and tell people's stories. So I basically made that a priority when I was deciding what college I wanted to go to, and then chose Clemson. Mm-hmm. And then since I didn't start off immediately my freshman year like I wanted to. I really wanted to start off as soon as I got there, but I just didn't have the connections to make those opportunities happen immediately once I got there. So I started the summer after my freshman year working towards that. And then I've been working towards it ever since.
How do you feel when people might make the comment that you mentioned, oh, dancers, they're not athletes?
Oh, I hate that. Do you know what you have to do
to be
a dancer? Oh my gosh. I practice every single day after school for 3 hours a day, and there's no off season in dance. And then you have the summer off, and people be like, oh yeah, well then you're not doing anything. No, you've got camps. And then to be a good dancer, you have to be in studio training, because if you're not, then you're losing your skill set over a span of 3 months. So I was doing camps, I was doing skills training. I had a full workout regimen that I had to compete, like checklist off from my coach every single summer. So I was doing that, just doing our workouts, and then go back right into the season. It starts as soon as school starts, and you're doing 3 hours of practice every single day. And then you do football games, you dance at the football games. So you're at school until the football game, then you dance, and then you go home. And then Saturdays even, we would have like conditioning days. So then we would come in on Saturday mornings, and it wouldn't be a full practice, but we would still be conditioning. And then we would do that for the whole season. And then competition season would start. And so then competition season starts, and then you do that every single day. And then all Saturday for like probably 10 hours, you're doing competition dance. So then you literally never get a time off. And it's definitely a different skill set, right? You know, it's dancers are definitely not the strongest people in the world. You look at them next to a football player, and like me standing next to Derrick Henry, I'm obviously going to be yay big. But like we had to do our routines. Like we would do our palm routines. We had to do our routines with weights in our hands to train and like condition. So it was a different level of hard and different level of emotional agony that you have to go through
for
that too.
How competitive is it?
Extremely competitive, but there is different levels to it. See, like, you know, I did studio dance and I did competition dance. Studio dance, I mean, you can compete against the girls that you, maybe you're both trying to become professional ballerinas or something and you're competing against one another mentally, but not physically. But I did competition dance in which you're literally competing against other teams for the whole day. So it's pretty competitive.
I would say so.
We got to the point my junior year? It was my junior year where we got a team disqualified because they like went and tried to say that we took choreography or something. And so we're just like, well, they're being bad sports. And then they got them disqualified. So like literally watching Bring It On, like that competitive level of just whatever it takes.
And there's also an aspect, I mean, there's a team
yeah,
as
oh,
well,
absolutely.
Right? So it's not just you absolutely. As a dancer. I mean, you're part of a yeah. team. So you've got to also function as a team. And that's a whole nother mm-hmm. skill set that
if
you have to learn.
If one person is off at all in the whole routine, say you're even like in dance, you go by eight counts. So say you're even like 1/10 of an eight count behind anybody else, you can tell in the routine and you'll be deducted points just because that one person was a little bit slow in one certain situation. If your skills aren't right, they'll be able to point out because it's all about like being uniform. So when you're watching a dance routine and you're seeing everybody's turning and one person just doesn't have their skills right that day, you can easily tell and then you're deducted points. So it's like everybody has to be perfect for the collective group to do well. And that's something that it was a really cool thing for me because I would always been a teammate my entire life. And like, I didn't want to do something like I did also studio dance for a very long time. So that's very almost individual because you're in classes, but you're working on yourself the whole time. But I wanted to be on a team because I had been my whole life with sports. And so being a part of that dance team was really that for me. And like, we spent all of our time together. I'm so close with a lot of the girls. Two of them actually live in Charlotte now, and I still see them all the time. So it's a huge team effort and something like you learn those skills and then you take them with you for the whole rest of your life. And in that time frame where I had my hamstrings torn, like, yeah, I had a really hard time because I had a lot of teammates that didn't fully understand why
I wasn't. Did they doubt you?
Oh, all the
that
time.
That question, you're yeah. not hurt. Why aren't you yeah. helping this team out?
All the people who I weren't necessarily as close with definitely did question me a lot. My coaches questioned me all the time because they had access to my medical records because I would bring them. And they'd be like, oh, you're okay. And I'm like, yeah. You don't
I know
understand.
My body. Something's like, not yeah. right.
but I would still be there because I was a teammate. I would still be there every single practice. And because I was there for my team through the whole time, even though people sometimes were like, is she really hurt? We don't really know. Like, you know, those questions came up by my junior year. I was elected co-captain. So even though I wasn't even able to dance for my entire sophomore year, to show that I was still there and being there for my team was a skill set that it really taught me a lot about, you know, being there for other people and even the amount of worth that having emotional support for other people and just being there, just having your presence there can have on somebody. And they ended up electing me co-captain when I wasn't even dancing. So
it says a lot about you.
So that was
for sure.
That was a really good learning opportunity for me to just be like, wow, you can still impact people if like in different ways, even if it's not the way that you imagined it going.
What did you learn about yourself then going through that 2 or 3 year type of journey?
Yeah, it was really hard. At the time, obviously, I've had life trials that are far more significant than that since that moment. But at the time, that was one of the hardest things I'd gone through. I hadn't really experienced loss. Like I was fortunate enough to not have any significant deaths in my family or anything like that. So I didn't really know how to process when things weren't going right for me. I was very fortunate growing up. And that was kind of the first thing where it just shook me off of my usual path. And it really, really, really tried me because not only was I in pain, so that sucked. I was in pain every single day and I didn't know why. I had trust issues because I was being told by different doctors things that didn't end up necessarily being true. And I kind of really had to learn to rely on myself a lot, but then also on the support of other people. Like, my parents were so incredible throughout this entire process. Like, I was going through step by step. I'm like, what doctors did I go to when? With my mom on the phone the other day, because I was like, I honestly, it was so much. And I tried to block out so much of that out of my memory because it was so hard for me. And I looked at the list of doctors and how many visits I had and how many physical therapy appointments and I had. And now being an adult, I know like how insurance works and what they don't cover. And I was just like, I can't believe that you guys like went through this with me for this amount of time and didn't make me feel bad about it. Like, they were so supportive to me the entire time. And
that's unconditional love.
Yeah. It was it. Now looking back, I'm like, I'm even more thankful to them, because I'm like, one, money. That's a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of driving, and a lot of emotional pain for them too, because like, they knew I was in pain, but they didn't know how to help me, because even the doctors didn't know how to help me. So now I just like think about how much the support of other people like really got me through that. And then it also helped me find what I was truly passionate about too. So there's a lot of growth that happened in that time frame, and I learned a lot about myself and decided basically the career path I wanted to go on at a very young age changed everything.
It did. And so, where it has led to now.
Yeah. And now I feel like I can connect with people in such a different way, because it's like, you can hear stories about people like, oh, so-and-so is injured. They've been injured for X amount of days, whatever, blah, blah, blah. This is the exact injury. And people can speculate about what's going on. But like, then I sit there and I'm like, well, there's so much complex information of like what's going on in their head. Cause then they're dealing with pressure to like maybe perform still or not perform still, or figuring out what they're going to do with their life, or if it's really that serious, or what information to tell versus what not information to tell. And so it's just like having that understanding of like, it's so complex, I think has made me better in the sense that like when I was telling stories in college, when I was writing at Clemson and injury stories would come up, I would have a lot more questions than just, you know, the average person, because I was like, well, how is this impacting them mentally? Like, if a player comes back from an injury, but what's their mental standpoint at that part? Are they scared? So I think
it's a big component of it.
Yeah. So I think it's really helped me too, because I'm like, I just know more now, because
and you can empathize with them.
Yeah, and
as
I can empathize. And that's the biggest thing for me, is like my favorite part about sitting down with somebody and like hearing their story is the listening part of it. And like, not like, they're going to be talking and you have to like find your next question or whatever, but to be able to listen to them and what they're really telling you, and getting people to open up and trust you, that's been a favorite aspect for me. And that's like something that that keeps me going and makes me still want to do what I do.
Do you still have any trust issues?
With doctors? Absolutely. Absolutely. I joke about this sometimes, but you know, what's that? I don't know the terminology for it, but where you tell yourself that you have like certain diseases or injuries. I think hypochondriac.
Yeah, hypochondriac.
Oh, I'm for sure a hypochondriac, because I'm like, I'll just self-diagnose myself from now. Like, I knew my hamstring was torn. I'll just tell myself what's wrong with me, which is horrible. Don't let yourself ever do that.
Or you're over dramatized things.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I feel bad. I must have cancer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's terrifying for me, because it's like, I don't even have one experience with it. I have like multiple experiences with it where I've gone in and doctors have been like, well, you should be able to do this if, you know, if you're feeling this way, like, you're probably fine. I'm like, okay, do the test. And then I'm not. So it's been something that I've really struggled with. My poor parents, they get so many phone calls like late at night of me being like, I think that this is wrong with me. And like, no one's going to take me seriously about it. And then they just kind of talk me down from the ledge. So I still struggle with that a little bit. Just having that sense of trust kind of taken away from me at such an early age. Definitely. I'm still.
Well, kudos to you though, for continuing. And I guess your parents as well, to continue seeking out an answer rather than just being complacent and saying, well, yes, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all we can go with. And hey, Kaylee, you're just going to have to deal with it. You know, rather instead of that, you know, you took the proactiveness to go out and continue to find answers, because I see it a lot that people just, when they go to a doctor, they just get glazed over and they just hear what the doctor says mm-hmm. and okay, well, they just become sheep and they don't ask more questions. They don't try to explain more about their situation. Something's not right. Let's talk more about this mm-hmm. or go seek second opinions or third opinions. So kudos for you to be able to do that.
Well, it was really easy for me because I was following the advice that they were giving me and I was in so much pain. Like what I failed to tell you though, is that I told you that I had pulled my left one, but in my treatment, I tore my left one entirely off, just like my right one. So I was like, I was getting worse this whole time. And I can feel that. You can trust in yourself and feel that.
You know what your body is.
You know what you're feeling. So that was really like the telling part to me. That was like, something is not right. We don't have the full amount of information because I should be getting better, but I'm getting worse. Like sometimes I couldn't even get up off the floor sometimes. And it was just confusing to me because I'd be able to like walk around all day and be a normal human. And then I'd be like sitting on the ground. I'd go to stand up and I'd fall right over. I'm like, why?
I don't mean to laugh, but yeah.
Oh, it's funny to me now. I'm like, why? Yeah, exactly. Why is this happening to me? And so that's why I kept pushing. And I had a lot of like, just like every single doctor would be like, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And some completely went off the beaten path and with some weird diagnoses, but finally being able to get to people that obviously professional teams really trusted these people to make decisions for them. And they were the ones that ultimately ended up making.
Oh, just like everything in life, there's levels mm-hmm. of with physicians, accountants, whatever. There's some that are better than others,
yeah.
You know? And so it's just part of that process of trying to find those. What is it though about sports that, why you want to tell stories related with sports? Why this gravitational pull towards that?
First of all, I've had a love for sports my entire life. So it wasn't really something that I imagined as a avenue for me. I wasn't the best athlete. So when I was young, I wanted to be an Olympic athlete. That was never going to happen. But I like had those dreams really early on when you're young and you think you can do anything in the whole world, which you can, but if you work for it. And I wasn't really working for it as an athlete, but I played pretty much every single sport in the book. Softball was the sport that I ended up sticking with the most, but I loved football. I absolutely love football. I wanted to play football so badly, so badly. Because my dad, he played football in college. He played for a D3 school that no one would probably know about. It was right by where he grew up. So he played football and he was coaching my brother in football. And I was the little tomboy on the sidelines being like, here's your water, like running out on the field, doing as much as I could because dad wouldn't let me play.
You wanted to be in.
I wanted to be on the field so bad and he wouldn't let me play. I'm like, well, it's an all boys league, so that made sense. But and they're 5 years older than me, so that also made sense. But I wanted to play so bad. I would go to every single practice, mostly because I had to be, because both my parents were working full time. So when my dad was coaching, that was, you know, me being watched over.
That was babysitting.
Yeah. So I would be out at the football field like every single day with my brother playing football, and I would be like literally racing the guys. Like, so they'd be doing drills and I would like run out on the field and start racing them. And it got to the point where like I was trying to run with the guys so much that my dad would be like, all right, if my daughter beats you, you run again.
So I would.
And I was so competitive, and I didn't, in my young mind, I didn't think like, these guys have shoulder pads on. They don't even want to be running right now. It is hot. And I'm like, I'm going to beat everybody. So I would run and I would run with them. And that was in my way of like participating on the team. So I was like, oh, I'm part of the team. I'm running with the guys. I'm doing drills, like little tiny drills, you know, the ones that my dad would be like, oh, she won't get hurt. We'll throw her in here. Because at the time I was really young. So I was trying to be involved as I could because I really wanted to play, but I just knew that that was never going to happen. And so then I would be the water girl at all the games and running out on the field and trying to be as involved as I could in sports because I just loved it so much. And I played soccer, basketball, softball. I was a diver for a really long time too. Like I tried everything.
You definitely did.
And I really wanted to be a really good athlete, and it just wasn't in the cards for me because I'd been focusing on dancing for so long. It didn't work out to do both. Even when I tried it with softball and dance, it just didn't work out to be able to do both. And so finally ended up giving it up. But I loved it for so long. And I had this deep love for football. And it came from my dad because I always, you know, I was a daddy's girl. I always wanted to be like my dad. And I wanted to be involved in that as much as possible. And see, even when, like, you know, I was little, going to football games with my dad and, like, trying to, like, learn as much as I possibly could. And my young brain, like, I wish now, looking back at it, I wish that I had focused more on it, or if I had, like, retained more information when I was younger, because I would love to have those memories of being like, oh yes, I saw this person live play. But at the time, I'm just enjoying it. I was just loving
being there.
You're
just in the moment.
I didn't know how much it would come to mean to me in my life at some point. And so I always knew that I wanted to be involved in sports because it had been such a big part of my upbringing. And I think that sports is so interesting because, like, regardless of whether or not you understand the sport, you probably have a connection to it. So it's universally something that people can kind of get behind. And it's this outlet for people to, you know, escape what they're going through in their lives. And I think that it's a really unique opportunity to be able to kind of teach people lessons through sport. You know, when they're looking at sport as their outlet, like, you can still teach them a life lesson, you know, that they might be able to take with them forever. Maybe there's somebody who's not used to people who aren't like them, and they see a story and then they have more sympathy in the future. I think that's an awesome experience of being able to be like, look, sport can impact people in so many different ways. And the way that you just tell somebody's life story can open somebody else's eyes to so many different things.
Oh, it definitely can. And now you're having an opportunity of, from a career standpoint, doing that.
Yeah.
So how much joy does that give you?
I love it. I mean, it's hard. It's really hard. It's really time consuming. It's the interesting thing for me is I always tell my friends, like, oh, I'm traveling for work this week. And they're like, oh my gosh, like, you get to go to all these fun places. I'm like, yes, but it's also a lot of work. I'm like working like 60 to 70 hour weeks. Sometimes it depends on like what's going on, but I work really hard. But then you look back on it and you're like, that was incredible. Like, I feel like I felt really good about being able to bring like somebody's story to life on TV. Like, those are my proudest moments, is when I work really hard on finding something that could be potentially impactful and making it come to life. And I'm like, I might not see the direct impact that it causes on somebody, but I know it was there. I know it was.
Because you can pick up on it because you've been through a lot of things. And so you know what might be a story that could be impactful.
Yeah. There was this really cool story I kind of got reminded of recently, where there was this little boy who was hanging around the Ole Miss baseball team for a really long time. And he was sick, and they kind of took him in and really took care of him. And they, you could just see the impact that he had on their faces when they would talk about him. And I was kind of reminded, I was looking through some of my old stuff, and that ended up, he was at the SEC baseball tournament to watch them play, to watch Ole Miss play. And we ended up being able to show a story of all of the guys talking about their impact, and like, they're almost in tears talking about how much this kid means to them. And then he was in the stands. And so be able to like, show that to people. It's like, okay, athletes are athletes. Like, they're incredible at what they do. They're so talented. They've made it to the pinnacle of their career. Even in college, like, some people can never make it to that level. So they're still so incredible to even be able to make it to that point. But they're also people, and they also impact people and volunteer in their communities and do different things that, you know, you don't necessarily think of. You think of them as athletes first, and you're like, oh, well, his batting average today wasn't that great, whatever. But I'm like, but he could also have done something that day that could have changed somebody's life. Like, he could have signed an autograph for somebody, and, you know, maybe that made that kid the happiest person in the entire world, and maybe he was going through something really hard. You have no idea. And to be able to kind of like bring some of those things to life, it just, that's a really cool thing for me.
Yeah. And now, from a perspective of where you're going, do you like behind the scenes more, or do you like being in front of the camera?
My favorite thing is just being able to sit down and talk to somebody. That can exist in multitude of different ways. So, you know, like, if I were to pursue the more behind the scenes kind of route, you can still do that, you know, sit down with people. If you go like the features route and, you know, tell their story, sit down with them, get to know all the different information. But I've been in the spotlight my whole life. And that sounds kind of like harsh, but I used to compete in pageants. So I've competed in pageants. I've been on a stage for dance my whole life. I'm not afraid of
a camera. Hey, you've been in the spotlight.
Right. So I'm like, it's not something that scares me. And I think a lot of people go into behind the scenes work because, like, yes, they want to do things that are impactful just the same way that people who want to do stuff in front of the camera do. But maybe they just don't.
They don't like being in the spotlight.
They don't want that or something. But it's, for me, I have the nice luxury of it's not a fear of mine. So it's not something that holds me back. But then also I'm like, I know what I really want to do at the end of the day is just to be able to impact people and tell their story.
Yeah, through stories.
As long as I'm doing that, I know I will be happy.
Well, that's a good mindset to have because you're not chasing financial
or fame. Yeah,
exactly. You're chasing what you feel that's in your heart, the passion of just being able to share these stories, because I'm a firm believer that they can impact people as well. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast, is that I felt that even just one person heard somebody else's story about even like what you're talking about, how you're overcoming things in your life and how sports, you know, played a role in that. Because I feel, again, like I mentioned, that sports is undervalued, mm-hmm. what it can do. And so just being able to continue to get those stories out and also help others connect, just like you were able to connect with RG3.
Mm-hmm.
You've never met him.
I've never met him, and
right?
I probably will. I don't know. But
but to that point, I mean, now, I mean, you feel mm-hmm. that you had a connection with him and could also empathize with him because
yeah.
you're going through something similar, because somebody was getting his, you know, story out as well. What about from a words of wisdom standpoint, where, you know, I'm big on mottos, phrases, quotes, or just life advice, and I know you've got a lot of life to live, right? But you also have experienced life and have been through some things and have also been around a lot of different people. What about for you? What's words of wisdom that has meant a lot to you?
So I'm a huge mantra person. I actually have, like, literally I carry words on me.
Oh, okay. So yes, this fits right into your style.
I've been actually wearing these for quite some time. My mom gave me this one. It says, she believed she could, so she did. And that one to me, it means, and it can be interchangeable with he, you know, too. But for me, it was impactful to me. It's, if you can believe in yourself, you can get through anything. So that's something that I've kind of tried to carry with me, is like the power of the mind is incredible. Like, even if you're just going through a workout and you're telling yourself, no, you can keep running five more minutes, you can keep running. Like, then you will, because your body's going to react to what your mind does. And if you set a goal for yourself or set, you know, some expectations that you want for yourself, like, you will achieve them if you put in the work. So that's the one I keep on my wrist. And then I have another one. My brother gave it to me, and it says, bloom where you're planted, which kind of just means to me, like, wherever you are, impact people and grow as much as you can, because life's about, you know, the journey. Like, I have a lot of goals for my destination, but something that I always keep trying to remind myself is that life is a journey, and we've all been, obviously, in the sports world, impacted so greatly recently, where we've realized, you know, life can be cut short at any time. You have no idea. Nobody knows what your path is going to look like, except for, you know, God. If you're religious, like, you have no other way of knowing what's going to happen to you in your life. So enjoying the journey is a huge thing. And I think it gets lost on people sometimes, and it gets lost on myself too. So that's why I always try to wear it. And then I have two more that I really love. So, big mantra person. I have on my walls in my room, I have one on my right of my bed and one on my left on my bed. So I try to look at them as often as possible. The one on my right says, everything that you want in life is on the other side of fear. And that's something that it's extremely impactful to me, because there's been a lot of things, and I use it as a reminder. I don't use it as like, yes, I believe that everything's great. I use it as a reminder to myself, because I feel like I've held myself back a lot because of the fear of what may happen, whether it's the fear of judgment from people or the fear of, in my case for dancing, the fear of what might happen. But something that I think that is good to remember is that, like, people can think about the what ifs negatively often, but if you think about the what ifs positively, then, you know, you kind of eliminate that sense of fear. And it's like, well, what if something great happens? So, and that's what I think, like, okay, it kind of goes with my other one that I have on the left side that says opportunity favors the bold. And that's one that I've been trying to keep with myself a lot longer, because obviously I've done enough things in my career to be able to get to where I am. And I've worked really hard to get to where I am. So I've had to make some bold decisions. But it's a good reminder to always make sure that, you know, like, if you want to pursue something and you want to be great, you have to be bold in that pursuit, because other people are going to be bold in their pursuit. And it's those people who are going fearlessly and boldly who will make it.
Now, I thought I was the one person in the world that loved words of wisdom and mantras more than anybody until I just heard you.
I love
think I've
them.
Met my match.
I love them. I'll start sending you some ones,
because
I find them on Instagram a lot, because there's like a lot of really inspirational. Social media, I think, can be a blessing and a curse.
Of course.
And especially in my age, I've seen a lot of negative impacts on myself too. But I've also seen a lot of positive impacts, and, you know, the way it can be used in sport too is really cool. And it has an incredible, incredible reach for being able to impact people. But one thing I really love is that a lot of people have tried to create positivity on that platform by creating like inspirational like posts and stuff. So I always like to save them and send them to people. So I'll start sending
them
to you.
Please send them. Yes, I love those. Michaela, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For spending the time with me. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I always love being on with you. So I appreciate you guys having me.
With many stories and experiences in life, there's usually some adversity. And as Kayla described, it was her own adversity that not only helped define her path, but also helped her connect and even relate to so many others, which truly gives her a unique perspective to understand just how impactful personal stories can be, even if it's only impacting one other person. Now that finishes episode 130, and more of our conversations can be found on your preferred podcasting platform, and you can also watch some of our episodes by visiting our Rich Take on Sports YouTube channel, where you can easily subscribe. And remember, focus forward so we don't live in the past. All the best, everyone.
You've been listening to Rich Take on Sports, the sports podcast with life. Visit richtakeonsports.com to subscribe and catch up on any episodes you might have missed. You can also follow us on Twitter @RichTakeSports. Thanks for listening.